to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio. And before we get underway tonight, we love hearing from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports, or you can email the show at elissa@yahoosportsradio.com. Well, tonight we're going to start off our program with some NBA news and notes, and there are plenty of storylines to discuss. At the forefront of our conversation will be the Dallas Mavericks. We're going to head out to the Western Conference, and that's why we have invited back always a Big E favorite, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, Mark Folliwell, who is joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. I'm sure you're enjoying this Friday night. You actually get it off tonight, Mark.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You know, in the NBA, sometimes your weekends get awfully busy. So a night off is always a wonderful thing. That's for sure, Alyssa.
You bet. Well, listen, before we get underway and get the pulse on the Mavericks, we want to extend congratulations to you and your broadcast partner, Derek Harper, for broadcast excellence. You guys picked up your own hardware. You guys got an Emmy right here in the Lone Star State as the best play-by-play and analyst team. Congratulations on that. That's outstanding.
Well, thanks, Alyssa. You know, I always have said for many, many years that a good team helps make the announcers sound better. So we've been lucky to call a good team for many, many years, and we've been lucky that it's in the nature sometimes of these Mavs, including recently against Sacramento. They played some pretty exciting games that lead to some exciting announcing. So, you know, they're a fun team to call, that's for sure, and hopefully we can bring out the best in terms of the viewing experience, and they bring out the best in us.
Well, you certainly deliver some of the best sports programming. But let's get down to business. Let's talk about the Mavericks. They're wrapping up a four-game homestand with Minnesota on Saturday night. That'll be game number 10 in the regular season. Mark, what have you learned so far about the Dallas Mavericks?
Well, I think I'm still kind of in a learning phase. I think we pretty much all are at this point. You know, I think this is a team that has extremely high potential on offense. We've seen some flashes of some good defense, but consistently it hasn't been there. It's been pretty up and down, but I know that Rick Carlisle, it is, of course, is going to keep demanding that they get better defensively, because that, of course, is where he feels like is going to be the difference whenever it comes to the biggest games, the games that matter, and the games, of course, that they'll play next spring, presumably, hopefully, in the NBA playoffs, mm-hmm. with the eye towards a long and exciting run there. So, you know, I think that another thing I've probably learned is that looking at how some of the new players are going through their growing pains and their ups and downs and adjustments, I think sometimes probably, and I think a lot of fans probably do the same thing, you just forget that there's a lot of challenges in changing organizations, and I think it goes beyond just establishing chemistry with new players. I think, you know, players sometimes, your head's in a lot of different places when you're trying to figure out, you know, life in a new city and in a new organization, and who do you go to for different things you need and for tickets, and just... Look, there's a lot that goes into it, and I don't think people realize that sometimes, and I think I'm even guilty of overlooking that. So, you know, I think that I'm learning that the adjustment process, while at times it looks like it's going smoothly, is still very, very much a work in progress, much like the defense is on this team as well. So some of these new guys are still trying to figure out their way and settle in.
The Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Fallowell joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And you reference talking about the challenges defensively. I mean, Dallas has certainly delivered offensively as advertised, but why have they not been efficient on the defensive end, Mark?
Well, I think that, number one, I'll stand by the idea that it does take some time to get everybody together on the same page. And so I think that's certainly one aspect of it. But, look, they're trying to go from being a team last year, Alyssa, that was around, depending on what particular statistic you looked at, but in most things, they ranked around 20th last year. But maybe it's a couple spots better in some things or a couple spots worse in some categories. But by and large part, they were a bottom third in the NBA defensive team last year. And understandably so. I mean, you look at the personnel on the roster, and, it's not too hard to figure out why that was the case. Well, look, this offseason, what they added to the mix that is going to make them hopefully make quantum leaps defensively is Tyson Chandler, former Defensive Player of the Year. I think Al-Farouq Aminu helps a little bit. But you also lost Sean Marion, who was a good defender, and you lost Vince Carter, who I thought was pretty underrated defensively and was a smart player and knew positionally how to be sound in that aspect of the game. So, number one, you're trying to work new guys in. Number two, I still wonder exactly how much defensive-oriented talent that you have relative to offensive-oriented talent. And then you're talking about trying to make a jump from being in the bottom third, and Rick Carlisle feels like to have a chance to be truly competitive at the highest levels, that they've got to be in the top 10. So you're talking about going from the bottom 10 to the top 10, and that's a pretty big leap that you're trying to make whenever you look at the fact that you've got some small guards in the backcourt. It's not like you have Jason Kidd here in the championship year, who was a very big, strong guard who you could switch on to a lot of twos and threes, as we saw guarding the likes of Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and on down the line, Kobe Bryant. I mean, he had to guard a lot of very potent scorers that played at shooting guard and small forward, and you just don't necessarily have that kind of size. So personnel and size of some of the personnel and defensive leaning of some of the personnel, I think those are reasons why that it's just still trying to get everybody on the same page and get them playing a good, sound team defensive game. And that's going to have some ups and it's going to have some downs. I don't think we're anywhere close to having that where Rick wanted to be in terms of the big picture.
Well, Mark, as you were saying, I mean, there's been highs, there's been lows, but how surprised are you that they've come in a little bit slow defensively, because they made that substantial move and fortified their roster with bringing back Tyson Chandler?
I got to be honest with you, I'm not really that surprised by it. I felt like it was going to be a while before we would really see them click on that end of the floor at a high level. And, I guess the only thing that surprises me is that even with Tyson here, that there's been two or three games where it's been really off kilter, where the other team shot well over 50% from the floor. And the fact that they've been just torched on the three-point line in a few games. So I guess those things have surprised me a little bit, but I really felt like the leap that they were trying to make from being a bottom third to a top third defensive team was not going to be something that was going to happen overnight, despite even adding a guy like Tyson Chandler. It's great to have him, and he is a hold people accountable kind of guy and a defense first kind of player, and is really going to focus his energies on that end of the floor, but he's only one man. There's only so much that he can do. So I think, it's just going to have to be patient with this team, I think, in terms of getting all that to come together.
Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Fallowell is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are up against the clock. We got to take our first commercial break, and we'll be rejoined talking some more about the Dallas Mavericks. Okay, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Fallowell is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, we love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter, @ERadioSports, and you can always go back and listen listen to our interview at yahoosportsradio.com/podcast. And Mark, this is your 14th season, I believe, broadcasting, being a part of the broadcast coverage for the Mavericks. You've witnessed a lot throughout the years, but specifically over the past 4 years, there's been so much turnover with the roster. I mean, so many players have come and gone and scratched players. What is your timetable with this particular roster in order to get this team to fuse, to get it to come together? I mean, are we looking like mid-December where you really see them starting to get into sync, to gel, and to stride out a bit?
Well, I think that when Avery Johnson was here, he always talked about judging things in 20-game increments. And I felt like whenever Rick Carlisle first showed up here, if you'll remember, Alyssa, they had a really bad start in Rick's first year. They were 2-7 in the first 9 games that year. Everybody was really panicking. And I said, look, things are off to a slow start, but I think you've got to give Rick 20 games, especially as the first-year coach of this roster, to figure out what he's got, who's here, who can play, who can't, and all that sort of thing. So, to me, I think that we're not to a stage to make a whole lot of conclusions about things until we get to the 20-game mark. And then, hopefully, at that point, players will be coming together, getting more on the same page. Coach will understand a little bit more of what he has and what he doesn't have in terms of some of their new faces and how that all should fit together. So I think that's a pretty good time frame to look at and hope for, A, some improvement, and B, for being able to just have a little bit better feel for how we should evaluate the way the roster is coming together and what we should specifically be looking for. So to me, it's always going to be hopefully something that is trending in a positive direction, but maybe a good evaluation point would be 20 games to say, okay, now we start to see some fruits of their labor, if you will.
Well, I got to ask you this. I mean, perhaps it's too early to ask you, Mark, but is this a roster that the Mavericks can build some continuity with in years to come? I mean, we look at some of the teams, even in the Western Conference, San Antonio, I mean, they've essentially retained their entire roster. They're starting 5, 14 mm-hmm. players return. Portland's got, 9-10 players back. I mean, this Mavericks roster, I mean, they seem diverse, they seem deep, and that perhaps they can build in the future. And as Mark Cuban has said, and even Rick, they're a high basketball IQ type team.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I definitely think that there's something that for a 2 or 3 year window that can be sustained in terms of continuity. I mean, you've got Devin Harris under contract. You've got Chandler Parsons under contract for at least 2 years. We know that Dirk's going to be here until the end of his career, whenever that may be. He's under a 3-year deal now, and we'll see if that's it or if he's going to reevaluate and want to play anymore after that. Then you'll have to address guys like Tyson Chandler and Monte Ellis in the upcoming offseason. But look, Monte seems like he loves it here. We know how Tyson feels about it here and how glad he is to be back. So I think you've got a chance to keep key components of this team together for a significant amount of time. I mean, and in the NBA now, I mean, 2-3 years is a significant amount of time. So I think you've got a chance to keep a pretty significant group and core together for the foreseeable future.
Okay, we're glad you're with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Elissa Walker-Campbell along with you over the next 2 hours. Right now, we're going one-on-one with Mark Folliwell, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer. And I have to be honest with you, Mark, I mean, high anxiety watching the Sacramento game on Tuesday night. I mean, when the Kings got off to that 24-4 run, and at the end of the first quarter, it was, 32-14. It was really difficult to watch, and you thought, man, they have dug themselves a huge hole. How are they going to get out of it?
Well, I think that when I look back at the first 8 games of the season for Dallas, that one was my favorite game so far from an entertainment standpoint and from a broadcasting standpoint.
I'm sure,
It was a lot of fun, and mm-hmm. it was a terrible start.
It was.
Foul trouble hurt things early on. I mean, and foul trouble for the Mavs included Monte Ellis and Parsons, and Tyson Chandler got one in the first minute and a half, and they decided to take him out of the game to keep him from getting 2 in the first part of the first quarter. And, look, the same thing kind of happened to Sacramento, too, with some early foul trouble. They just fought through it a little bit better. But look, the Mavs stuck with it. The game really turned in the second quarter when DeMarcus Cousins got his 3rd foul, and then the Mavericks finally kind of got their legs under them, if you will. And Sacramento did some things that helped Dallas get back into the game, like putting them on the free throw line way too much and disrupting their own rhythm by committing a lot of fouls and slowing down the flow of the game. But from the last 5 minutes of the second quarter through the third quarter and into the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, I looked it up here recently, the Mavericks had an incredible stretch for over 22 minutes. They allowed 26 points on 24% shooting, They forced 15 turnovers. They had five blocks or six blocks and five steals in that stretch. So they had a really, really good defensive run, and some of it was, you know, just getting their head into the game. Some of it was Sacramento making some mistakes. Monte Ellis had a slow start that night because of foul trouble, and his offense really kicked into high gear in the third quarter of that game, showing that he's still a very much score-in-bunches kind of player. And then the other thing that made the night great was Dirk Nowitzki's accomplishment.
Oh, yes.
Of, you know, you had that going on as a subplot to trying to come back from a 24-point deficit, you know, with Dirk moving in to ninth on the NBA scoring list. And I think even more significantly than that, to be the top foreign-born player, you know, top scoring foreign-born player in NBA history. So there was a lot going on that night, and it was a heck of a comeback for Dallas, that's for sure.
That's right, and overcoming a 24-point deficit, and they really did embrace, as Coach Carlisle has talked so much about, they've got to raise their level of competitiveness, and he really lit into them after that Miami game. I mean, that loss at home, that was really difficult, and he was talking a lot about, you know, being an initiator, not a reactor. You've got to be physical, and especially as you look through the schedule so far, they've already faced three of the top rebounding teams in the league.
Yeah, they faced Utah, and they actually held their own pretty well against Utah in a game that was just 1 week ago tonight, matter of fact. Last Friday night, they held their own against Utah and out-rebounded them in a game where they just hammered Utah up at Salt Lake City. So, look, you know, they're not a terribly physical team, and there's only going to be so much that they're going to be able to do in that regard. But I think one thing that can help you compensate for that is, especially when they're fully healthy, and the depth they have in their team, and multiple guys who can play point guard, and multiple small forwards, and, you know, they've got three big guys that can play, and they've got, you know, some players who can mix and match at different positions and be very versatile. I think the depth of the roster hopefully allows that you can play physical, and physical doesn't necessarily mean that you're knocking the crap out of people. Physical can also mean just playing with an edge and being very intense and playing at a really high motor level. And so when you're deep and you can manage minutes and you can play guys in short bursts and then they can go out and play at a really high intensity level and then they're spent and then you take them out of the game and you get somebody else in. So I think that they can generate some physicality over the long haul if they approach it like that. And I think that's, you know, certainly what I think Rick wants to see out of them. But, you know, that like a lot of other things on this roster is still just very much in the, maybe past the embryonic stages, but it's still pretty young in terms of this roster coming together, and that's, you know, one of the many things that we'll have to watch and see how it all plays out after we've had a little bit more time to judge it. You know, they need him, and he needs the opportunity that he's going to have here for things to be opened up because of the other dynamic players on the offensive end of the floor. So you got it, Alyssa. It'll be a fun game to be at Saturday night. Number one pick, Andrew Wiggins in town. So looking forward to it.
Absolutely. That was Mark Falwell on the Stewart Cadillac guest line for the latest deals and models. Check out StewartCadillac.com. We will be right back at YSR. Okay, yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And as promised, it is time to pack our bags. We're going to head to Norman, Oklahoma to huddle up with our good friends from OU Insider and KREF 1400 AM. As Sooner fans, myself included, we are still reeling from that 34-point home loss to Baylor. So our go-to guy, hopefully, is going to provide some answers, is James Hale. And James Hale is joining us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line. Stewart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. And I hope you're going to warm me up because it's awfully cold down here in Houston, James.
Yeah, it's cold in Oklahoma, too, you know, so the weather's changing. And I'm okay with it. You know, it's fall, so I'm glad we still change seasons because it's awful hot around here when it's hot. So I'm okay with it. And maybe Coach Stoops and his staff, maybe they're on the hot seat a little bit. It's the worst loss for Oklahoma at home since Bob Stoops has this great run at Oklahoma. But it's been 16 years, and Oklahoma losing at home to Baylor, losing for the second straight year to Baylor, does not sit well with fans across the nation. The media is kind of squawking, too. So that was a demoralizing loss. I mean, Oklahoma had a great first quarter. Then after that, after the interception thrown by Trevor Knight, that was returned to the one. And then the, you know, the roughing the punt penalty just seemed to take all the steam. And then in the second half, when Oklahoma played a zone defense and trying to blitz in the middle but playing zone on the outside, and Petty just picked them apart two straight drives. one point he went 18 for 18. That's demoralizing, too, because, first of all, Oklahoma didn't run the right defense. Second of all, they didn't change when they saw what Baylor was doing. And third, when you realize maybe they didn't have the personnel to change, well, that's alarming in Sooner Nation. So a lot of questions about the Sooner program right now. That loss does not sit well. It knocks them out of everything except some kind of bowl. And Oklahoma goes to Texas Tech, and we'll see how they do. And you know that game's not always an easy one, even though Tech doesn't seem to be very good this year.
You know, James, I was reading the Oklahoma sports page, and columnist Barry Trammell, he posted an article on there on why the Sooners are college football's most disappointing team. Would you agree?
They're one of them. You know, when Oklahoma was picked in the top four in the preseason polls, and then about what? After the Tennessee game, was it that the national pundit said that Oklahoma is one of the two most complete teams in college football, and everybody was predicting they would wind up in the college football playoff? And now they've lost three games. They've lost two games by five, and then they get blown out by Baylor at home. And in the second half, it didn't look like they had the will to win. So it's demoralizing, and I don't disagree. I think they have been the biggest disappointment, or certainly one of them, in college football. I can't think of another team that had such lofty preseason thoughts that have fallen out of the top 25 or fallen so far. So, you know, you look at some of the other teams, they didn't have that kind of ranking. I mean, Florida State was in it. Florida State's still undefeated. You know, Alabama has lost, but they're still in the top five. Auburn has a couple of losses, but they're still in the top 10. You know, the big surprises are the teams from Mississippi, you know, but Oklahoma was supposed to be right there. Instead, you've got TCU and Baylor that are the main cogs in the Big 12 this year, and nobody saw that coming. I mean, TCU had lost so many players in the preseason, and yet Gary Patterson's done such a great job. And, of course, the move of Boykin to quarterback has just been amazing. And then, of course, Baylor, Art Briles is doing it again, and now that Petty's healthy, showing why he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country.
Glad you're with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going one-on-one with James Hale from KREF, 1400 AM in Norman, Oklahoma, also the senior writer with OU Insider. And so, James, you know, coming into the 2014 season, I have certainly very high expectations for the Sooners. I had them down as a Final Four team. But do you even think, or will they finish in the top four within the Big 12 conference?
Well, it's questionable because right now they're tied for sixth, so I don't know. I think more importantly, though, E, they've got to find answers to what they're trying to do and make a commitment and recruit to what they're trying to do. I think too much offensively, they're scheming and game planning for the opponent, and they love the fact they have diversity in their offense and they can do several things, but Oklahoma's kind of okay at a lot of different things, but not really great at anything. So do they want to be a zone read team? Okay. Then run your quarterback and understand if he gets hurt, the next guy's got to go in. If you want to be a diamond team, okay, you can run zone read out of that too, and you can take advantage of all those running backs. If you want to be a pro set team, then go recruit Sam Bradford, Landry Jones, Jason White, somebody like that, and make sure you can really throw the ball 40 times a game if that's what you want to be. I think Oklahoma needs to decide if they're a running football team with the ability to throw if they have to. Is that the way they want to go? Right now they seem to be a throwing team with the ability to run it when they want to, and I think it's got to be the other way around. Defensively, I know Mike wants to put pressure. That's why he went to the 3-4. You got to go get corners. You have confidence in that they can go and cover and press coverage. And that means you got to have 4 or 5, because when the other team goes to DBs, either your safeties have to be able to cover, or you have to have the ability to come in with other corners. So I think Oklahoma will spend the next three games and the bowl games searching for an identity to what they want to be going forward in this new age of college football. Oklahoma's a little behind on the X's and O's dynamics of it right now. They need to catch up, and they need to get personnel into their program and what they want to do. So whether they finish in the top four, I don't know. But if they come out of that bowl game knowing what they need to recruit to in the future and exactly what they're going to do, then I think Bob Stoops could get him going again.
Okay, let me ask you this, because I know that you're at all the press conference. How has Bob Stoops, how has he responded to the criticism of the Sooners? And is he retreating a bit and being agreeable that, you know, hey, these are the things that do have to take place and change?
No, he's being Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops is a very confident, defiant man. Now, he takes blame for what happened, and he does say that they've got some things they have to change and work on, but he does point out it was just one game. And he points out that they've won a lot of football, even in the last few years, and he points out just last year they were sixth in the country coming off the big Sugar Bowl win. You know, so he points out that things sometimes happen, and other teams are good too. But that's what Oklahoma fans don't stomach very well. They don't stomach the fact, what, Coach, you're telling us that TCU and Baylor, they're better than mighty Oklahoma and the program that Oklahoma is? Coach, are you saying that everybody else is caught up with you? And if that's the case, why is that, Coach? Why haven't you been able to keep Oklahoma among the elite and lead in college football? Well, we know there's more parity in college football, and because you can only sign 25, a lot of good players fall to other teams. We got it, and I totally understand that. So then it gets down to coaching sometimes. And, all right, Coach, are you telling us you and your staff can't coach us up to an elite level? And that's what the Sooner fans are asking, see. So he hasn't retreated at all. He's pretty defiant. He hasn't changed because he's a routine guy, and they're still in their routine, and he realizes they just suffered a terrible loss. But he's staying with that mantra. He doesn't get too high or too low after wins or losses. And he's staying with that. And I think he still believes that they can be a great program under his direction and his staff.
Okay, talk to us about and give us an update on Trevor Knight.
He's not playing Saturday. You know, he suffered temporary paralysis, you know, about 10 or 11 minutes. But he was okay, and he's walking around in the – there's a medical term for that. I don't have it in front of me. But – he was walking around in the locker room, but he's awful, so he hasn't practiced at all this week. So Cody Thomas will get the starting call. Now, Sterling Shepard is also questionable. He's done a little more this week, but he couldn't go Saturday when he tried to make it go, and he's questionable for Saturday. OU may go into this game without their starting quarterback and their best receiver against Tech. Again, I know the odds maker still has Oklahoma a solid favorite.
Hey, James Hale is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, you can listen to him online at KREF, 1400 AM. Hey, what time is your show on, James, each and every week, so they can check you out?
11 to 2, sportstalk1400.com. Your listeners can listen to it down in the great state of Texas.
Absolutely. Well, what a week in college football. So the playoff committee shakes things up in the top four. So did they get it right this time?
Well, that's a great question, because Florida State hasn't lost yet, so why are they dropping? I mean, you know, yeah, I think sometimes you can evaluate schedules and how teams are playing. You can say, well, it's a different year. Well, they still haven't lost yet. They're still the defending champs, so I wouldn't drop them at all in the poll. I like TCU being in it, though. I think TCU's played as well as anybody in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Mississippi State's been the biggest story in the country, and I like what Oregon's doing out there. I also like Alabama, and to be honest, I think Alabama may be the best team in the country. So somehow I think they're going to wind up in there. But teams are going to eliminate themselves, right? I mean, Mississippi State and Alabama play this weekend, right? And you still have some big games that are coming up. So I don't mind it so much. I was a little surprised, though, that Florida State dropped to third.
It is going to be a very big weekend in college football. We've been visiting with James Hale, truly one of the best in our business. You stay warm up there in Oklahoma, and I look forward to catching with you again real soon. Thank you so much, James. We appreciate it.
We definitely will. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports. We will be right back. Okay, yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And be sure and connect with us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports. And you can always go back, hey, check out our podcast page, all of our shows at yahoosportsradio.com/podcast. And up next in our interview, it is the one that you've been waiting for. We're going to dive in. We're going to preview the 2014, the 2015 men's college basketball season. And how about last year, UConn's improbable run to the NCAA title? And how the season ended. It's certainly, all I have to say is my takeaway from that was it inspired a lot of teams and that the race is wide open. So right now, joining us on the Stuart Cadillac phone line is Ken Davis. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Ken Davis, of course, is a sports writer, an author, and he's going to give us the helping hand on tonight's preview. How are you, Ken? It's been way, way, way too long.
Doing great, E, and time for my favorite part of the year, when the college hoop starts up. So we're getting it going, getting it cranked up this weekend, and we're back. As you mentioned, we haven't been out on the floor since the UConn Huskies won it in Dallas, and that was an incredible story to chronicle, their fourth national championship, and that's just kind of amazing, seeing as how I came here in 1985, and they were in the bottom of the Big East Conference back then. So it's been quite a ride since 1999 when they won that first one, and now they got four banners hanging up at Gamble Pavilion. Pretty amazing.
Well, it all starts with leadership, and Kevin Ollie, I know the last time you were on the show, that was a big part of our conversation. I mean, it all starts with leadership.
It does, and Kevin's just been amazing. I mean, to do this in his second season as a head coach in the NCAA, and that first year they were banned from the tournament, and you know, he still got 20 wins out of them during that ban, and you know, then he was pursued quite heavily in the days and the weeks, right? Well, even during the Final Four, but immediately after, his name was mentioned with the Lakers job and the Cavaliers job, and he ended up getting a nice new package, re-upping, and he'll stay here a while for sure. You never know. He's young still. I think he's 42 now, and so you've got he's got a bright future ahead of him, and you know, that was a big boost for his career, obviously, but he hasn't forgotten where he came from, where he's going, and he's still very focused and worked real hard on the recruiting trail over the summer. I mean, you know, that doesn't surprise me, but if you win a national championship, I suppose some people can relax, but he hit the recruiting trail hard, and they're in the running for two really big recruits that we're going to find out between now and November 21st that could just propel them into more championships over the next couple of years, because I think this kind of view this season as a transition year, although I think they're a Sweet 16 team. I really do. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, once you get in the tournament, you know, you never know. I mean, no one expected them to get to the Sweet 16 last year and then beat Iowa State, Michigan State, Florida, and Kentucky consecutively. And that's when it really got fascinating. I mean, they were one basket away from losing their first game, and then they went into overtime against St. Joseph's. And then that just really seemed to propel them. And once they beat Iowa State, the way they looked that night in Madison Square Garden, you knew they had a chance. And they just became this very confident team. And it's like you said, it's always wide open. It really is. I mean, we look at right now, starting out with Kentucky, and people say they have two NBA teams. And, you know, maybe they do. I mean,
right.
I don't know if they go out and beat an NBA team, but they're certainly loaded. I think it's nine McDonald's All-Americans is the most anybody's ever had on one team. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Well, John Calipari, yeah, he added four more McDonald's All-Americans. I mean, that's a tough team to beat. And as you said, their B team could probably be starting anywhere in the country, too. It's crazy.
Sure. That's what everybody's saying. I've seen them so far. I haven't seen them on TV or anything. So, you know, then it's the chore of putting things together and getting some chemistry. And it worked well for the Wildcats in 2012 when they won. It didn't work so well the next year when they went to the NIT, and then of course last year they did get back to the championship game, but it was UConn that had the hot hand. But you know, they're easily, in my opinion, they're my preseason number one. I still do for FoxSports.com. I'm still doing the power rankings, so people can see my preseason power rankings if they go to FoxSports.com, click on college basketball, and then click on power rankings. I don't know how you can go against them on paper. There's probably five or six teams that are up at that top level, but in my book, you got to start with Kentucky.
When you review the championship game from last year between Kentucky and UConn, what prevented them, the Wildcats, from winning it all?
Well, I think they, you know, because of youth in some ways, they may not have been, I don't want to say focused, but you know, they were right there. It was a close game. UConn just executed better down the vital minutes in the second half, and UConn had Shabazz Napier, a senior leader, and you know, I always love to see that. I'm old school, and I like seeing those seniors that stick around. And he was very driven, very motivated, because they had been banned that year before, and I think that motivational drive that UConn had, and it started with Shabazz, and of course, Ryan Boatwright was his backcourt mate, and Ryan's going to be the leader on the team this year. He decided to come back, and I think they both made really wise decisions. When you look at Shabazz now, with the Miami Heat and was a first-round draft pick, and he wouldn't have even been drafted the year before. I can guarantee you that. I mean, I think that was one of the smartest decisions ever made by a kid to come back, and then he was, you know, ended up being conference player of the year, and he was MVP of the Final Four, and he got a lot of national player of the year award consideration too. And it couldn't have been a better story, because the guy is just really team oriented, very he had to follow up Kimball Walker and ended up doing something pretty impressive by his own right by taking them to another championship. But and Kentucky was very talented. They had some foul trouble. I think they got a little flustered at the end of the first half, and it was just UConn's time. It was just one of those things that they weren't going to be denied, and it had a lot to do with Shabazz reminding those guys the year before that their opportunity had been taken away, and it was not even on their own fault. It was for reasons academically that of players before them at UConn. So it was one of the coolest stories I've ever followed, not just because I've written about UConn for so long, but I think the whole national college basketball media entourage was just very intrigued by what they did, and there was a point even at the very end of the season in the conference tournament where they had two games against Louisville where they looked horrible, and you just thought, well, they'll be in the tournament, but it may not be a very long ride, and it turned out all the way to the last night. So pretty cool.
Ken Davis, award-winning sports writer who has covered college basketball for over 35 years, is joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us online at eRadio Sports. Tell all the listeners across the country, Ken, where they can check out some of your work, too.
I have my blog at kendavisfiles.com. There's everything about my background there, too, and you can still order the book that came out last year, Things Kansas Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die.
Uh-huh.
So it's appropriate time to go back and buy that. It came out about a year ago this time. And so, I blog on there, and I am now following in your footsteps and doing a little dabbling in radio on internet.
Yay.
Radio.
And,
you can hear my shows on Thursday nights between 8 and 9 Eastern Time. It's called College Countdown with Ken Davis, and it's on smcradio.com. If you go to smcradio.com, you can see all the shows that the network has pulled together, and you can click on the College Countdown with Ken Davis and hear it live there, and you can hear it on TuneIn Radio, too. So we'll see what happens with that. It's been a lot of fun to be in that mix the last 10 weeks. It's something I've always enjoyed doing when I talk to you or do other shows and stuff.
Sure.
So now I'm on the other side, and we've had a lot of good guests so far, so it's kind of fun to, as you know, just to get things set up and when you have a good show, and then try to live through it when you have a bad show. But you don't have any bad shows. I know that.
Oh, you're so sweet. Hey, Ken, we are flat out of time. I can't believe that. Ken Davis has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We've just got to have you back in a few weeks because I want to get through the top five. I've got Arizona in my top five, and they certainly pride themselves on defense, and we're so close last year, I think, to advancing to the Final Four. Ken, always a pleasure. Congratulations on your success. We'll talk to you real soon, I promise, okay?
Thanks a lot, E.
Absolutely. Ken Davis has been with us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line for the latest deals and models. Check out stewartcadillac.com. We will be right back at YSR.